So the next one is Inri Walpert. So here, this is one of the ones where I mentioned where the people, the same people, show up again and again and again. So this guy, this is a request for reconsideration and modification of a final order. He had a client where he, as part of representing the client in getting patent applications, he got a business interest, a percentage of the company, partial ownership, and he did not inform the client of conflicts that can arise with respect to him both working for the client as the client's patent attorney and also getting ownership interest in the client. There was no informed consent about that at all. And then he had filed a whole bunch of provisionals, allowed them to go abandoned, and then fabricated emails where he informed the client that this was going to happen. But those emails didn't actually exist. They were just fake. And obviously, because they were fake, the OED found that he had failed to notify the client of the problems with those provisional applications and that they were going to go abandoned. So the rules that were violated here by the OED, says the OED, was that you're supposed to refuse employment where you won't be able to be independent, and you're supposed to limit business relationships with a client without, but you have to, if you do it, you need informed consent, and you have to disclose conflicts of interest and not have conflicts of interest that are directly adverse. He also violated the provision that requires candor towards the tribunal, towards the OED. So this attorney admitted that he fabricated the emails but said that they were reflections of what actually happened, and that's why he fabricated them, is to show the record of what he actually did, and that he was very remorseful that he fabricated them, but they were honest. And then they found that he wasn't being he wasn't being honest with the tribunal, and that the conduct showed dishonesty, fraud, deceit, and misrepresentation. I think those fake emails were pretty, were pretty bad against him. So here, the OED excluded him from practice before the office. Just so much more serious. Moving on to the unauthorized practice of law, you're not allowed to do it if you're not allowed to. Inri Cole. So again, another person who has appeared multiple times in multiple decisions by the OED. This one, he had, during his third OED suspension, he violated the suspension and was excluded. And so after being excluded, that's where this case and this decision came from. So he's already excluded. He continued receiving notices from the USPTO. He didn't withdraw as the attorney of record, and he didn't advise the USPTO that he changed his address. So as part of his, before being excluded and after being excluded, his practice was to send his patent work to another person who was a patent attorney named Mr. Schindler. As part of this arrangement, so they're not in the same law firm. They're just two different patent attorneys in different law firms, and he would send his work to the other guy. The clients didn't know that he was doing that. He communicated still directly with his clients, and he would actually write the applications and then send them to Mr. Schindler, who would review them. If there needed to be corrections, he'd send them back to Mr. Kroll to revise and discuss with the client, and then Mr. Schindler would file it. But he never communicated directly with the clients. And this happened both before and after exclusions. Mr. Schindler, who testified in front of the OED, said he also did trademark work for him by referral, and that he would draft those applications, but Mr. Kroll would still communicate directly with the clients. And as a as background, Mr. Kroll was still a licensed attorney, just not allowed to practice in front of the USPTO, and that was one of their reasons for why this is allowed, is because he's allowed to have clients, and so he can advise his clients and practice law. He just can't practice in front of the USPTO, so they thought they were doing that correctly, I guess. And then Mr. Kroll is the one who, the guy who got this order against him, the excluded guy, would collect the fees and would share some of the fees with Mr. Schindler, but that was not disclosed to the clients either. And this arrangement was both before and after exclusion. So the violations that were found to occur, I didn't mention this, but Mr. Kroll, who's practicing in, I think, New Jersey, would take the client's retainer money and deposit it in his wife's checking account in Hawaii. You're not allowed to do that. It has to be in the same state. The checking account has to be in the same state. And that checking account has to be just for your client's retained fees, right? But the OED, in investigating, found that there were drafts from that account that were made to Home Depot and Costco and to petty cash, and that's not allowed because it's you're mixing personal and client money. But also, the check that was made out to petty cash is not allowed because you can only the checking account for your client's retainer money can only be drawn to specific people or clients. You can't do it to you can't give money to unnamed people from that account. And so that was a violation of 37 CFR 11.115. And then after being excluded, he was still advising clients and practicing in front of the USPTO. And he even participated in an interview with a trademark examiner. And that's certainly not allowed. That is the unauthorized practice of law in front of the USPTO. And then something that was interesting that I learned from this is